This is a Suno India production and you are listening to the Suno India show. India is breaking records of COVID-19 positive cases across the world. Daily cases in the country have hit a new high of over 3 lakhs. On one hand, despite having a whole year, our health infrastructure does not seem to be prepared for this second wave. There are viral videos of rows of burning pyres around Ghats as people take to the internet to plead for a hospital bed, ventilator, oxygen, and medicines. On the other hand, central and state governments seem to be directly responsible by allowing lakhs of people to congregate for the Hindu festival Kumbh Mela in Uttarakhand this month.
Health department officials have already detected 1,700 COVID-19 cases in the past 5 days at the Kumbh Mela. As devotees come from different parts of the country, the non-observance of COVID-19 norms may result in the infection spreading to several states.
In the state of West Bengal, BJP and TMC have bragged about massive crowds in their election rallies. The impact of these events have been far-reaching. This week, the daily cases in West Bengal doubled to 9,000 cases. The Trinamool halted rallies in capital Kolkata while keeping public meetings in districts to 30 minutes. The BJP has capped participation at 500 people at each public meeting following the Election Commission's new guideline for campaigns in West Bengal. In other states, territories such as Delhi, Maharashtra, Gujarat and Telangana, people have moved to the high courts for beds, oxygen and remdesivir. The Supreme Court has decided to transfer all such corona-related cases to itself for final decisions. This has now become a talking point in the West Bengal election too, where TMC is blaming the BJP for this crisis of the second wave. The central has paid an advance of ₹4,500 crore to the pharmaceutical companies Serum Institute and Bharat Biotech. As per the new vaccine policy from May 1st, these companies will give 50% of the vaccines they manufacture to the centre and the other 50% to state and private hospitals. The policy also allows liberal pricing. Serum Institute, for example, has said that while it sells vaccines to the centre for ₹150, they will charge state governments ₹400 for the same. BJP has, on the other hand, announced that if the people of West Bengal make them win in the state, they will get the vaccine for free. Irrespective of the state election, as the central government, BJP has the power to make it free across the country. Hi, I am Surya Tapa Mukherjee, your host for this episode of the Suno India show. To get an expert perspective that would answer our burning questions in these chaotic times, I spoke to Dr. Shomodeep Bhoumik. He is an international public health specialist working on policy impact at the George Institute for Global Health. He is also an associate editor for evidence synthesis at BMG Global Health. Disclaimer, Suno India works with the George Institute to help produce their own podcast.
So on one hand, there are the political rallies, but on the other hand, the election process in itself, in terms of people going out and standing in queues in close proximity to vote, and there being that sort of long queues or crowds. In terms of that, like, would you say that there should have been alternative arrangements, or what preparations should have been there about holding polls in particular during this time?
We live in a democratic country, and I believe that having accountability and governance structures in place is the most important thing to manage a pandemic, which means that elections need to be held as per the constitution. Logistically, I do not see major challenges in maintaining COVID norms in an election process in itself. It's quite easy to enforce social distancing in queues, as well as inside the polling booths, and also the fact that people are wearing masks, providing free N95 masks at the polling booth queues would have been a really good investment. But all these things were quite easy to do, but it looks like somehow people started believing, and by people I mean not just people, I also mean the public health experts who serve in various government committees, as well as the politicians and the bureaucrats started believing that there is no second wave going to come over when there is clear evidence that it has happened in all countries, and it would be if we didn't do the right things.
Despite the second wave being declared, leaders of BJP, Trinamool and other political parties, as you've mentioned, were holding rallies with lakhs of people. Daily COVID cases in the state have now doubled in 8 days. The BJP is continuing to hold rallies of up to 500 people, while the Trinamool has finally stopped. Is the state's, West Bengal's health system adequate enough to deal with the impact of these gatherings?
So I will start off with the fact that this is something for the Election Commission to enforce and bring out regulations in. And without the absence of that, we are in a scenario where people are doing whatever they want. If there are laws to be put in place to prevent the numbers, this wouldn't have happened. So, and that is actually quite sad that nobody wants to take accountability of things in the pandemic, be it the Election Commission or the state government or the central government. There should have been definitely a better plan. So, about the preparation of the health systems, I think West Bengal has a small marginal advantage by learning, in the sense of learning from other states which are currently dealing with the crisis, mainly Delhi and Maharashtra. So that should serve as a strong warning for West Bengal to actually start preparing really well, because now we know what a crisis looks like. We really need to get hospitals in place, along with oxygen supplies, along with all other critical care equipments. And more importantly, we also need to work to have adequate healthcare workers in place. And this would mean not only doctors, but also other kinds of healthcare workers. And I would just like to stress that I think everybody around is talking about COVID and the crisis and the resistance preparedness around it. But our strategy across all states mostly have been that people are just taking up beds and allotting that, okay, this is a COVID bed. But it's important to remember that all other diseases have not disappeared. We really need to think about the critical needs of non-COVID patients and the access they can get to healthcare services and how we can deliver them. We also need to start having to create vaccinators. I think that's something that can be trained for a lot of people, and the healthcare workers in the primary health centers who are trained to do that, they can be engaged into doing actually other services for which they are trained to do. And for this, there's a need for some planning, and I think this can also create jobs in terms of a sagging economy. This can create jobs. You also need to focus on contact tracing, because and this should be with foot on the ground and not through apps, because clearly the app that has been designed is not working at all and is not being implemented. We need people to be trained to contact tracing. They need to be employed with decent salaries, with insurance so that they can go, and obviously with adequate protective equipment so that they can go and do the contact tracing and prevent the surge. In a pandemic, one hand rule is you can never prepare your health system enough. The focus should be on prevention, and that should be the key.
So now that we have data from the first and the second COVID wave, what do you think about lockdown as a strategy to contain this virus?
I really think the central government needs to seriously consider a strategy of a national lockdown. I will come later why I'm advocating for a national lockdown rather than local or state-wise lockdowns. But essentially, a lockdown does not mean a lockdown alone in itself. It should also be along with investments in social welfare, putting in a safety net for migrants and people who are vulnerable. Also, giving direct benefit transfer to people who are eligible for it. And this should not be like 1,000 or 2,000 rupees, which makes completely no sense. It should be equal to the common minimum wages of our country for 1 month. That should be given along with it, or preferably before the lockdown is declared. And also, as I said, distributing N95 masks and focusing a lot on contact tracing by putting foot on the ground. I think that's like all of these together needs to be implemented if we want to come out of this crisis. Our health systems are totally collapsing everywhere, and I don't think there is a way out of COVID wave 2 without a national lockdown. And the reason I think it should be a national lockdown rather than a state-wise lockdown is because that's actually, in my opinion, that's the quickest way out for us to break the transmission chain. Because if we do it now in Delhi and then in Maharashtra and then 2 weeks later in West Bengal and then in Assam, it will just keep on prolonging the thing without actually breaking the transmission everywhere in the country. That's number one. And I think I need to really emphasize that the longer this is changed, this lockdown thing keeps happening in one part of the country or another, it not only has a health impact, it also has an economic impact. No investor in the sense of his mind would be investing any monies or starting any business when people are dying in a country in which they are investing. From both an economic and public health standpoint, considering the health system really being stressed out, lockdowns are the only option to me. I think so. And yes, of course, with all the other things, it cannot be like last year when it was just a lockdown with nothing else.
When we see the working class, we see a lot of people, migrant laborers, for example, who become homeless because they're unable to pay rent and they earn on the basis of daily labor. They're also in the slums. The architecture in itself does not really allow much for social distancing, where you have families of six people living in one room. And these rooms in itself are very interconnected with small lanes. They say that hunger is going to kill us, or these other feelings are going to kill us before the virus.
Yes, I think it's very important to understand that there is a big category of people who cite economic causes and actually cite that, okay, what will happen to the migrant workers if we enforce a lockdown again? But I think it's very important to put the perspective of equity, as you rightly said, into the planning. Because what is happening right now is like the more privileged people are actually under lockdown because they can afford to and be at home and work from home. But what will happen over time, and that's actually already happening, is more and more people who are forced to work because of their livelihood are going out and as a consequence getting more affected by it. So we really need to work on this. And as I said, that I think we can't solve all the solutions, but we cannot just give up saying that, okay, we can't do anything about them, so that's why we won't even do the lockdown. And I think giving direct benefit transfer equivalent to the common minimum wage right before the lockdown is declared is the first and most foremost important thing that should prepare us. And yes, there are issues around housing and sanitation, and it's sad that after so many years of independence, we are not being able to assure the basic things in place while we talk of trillion-dollar economies. So we really need to work on the social determinants of health, and that has to be a long-term plan. And I think it's important for policymakers to understand that investing in housing, sanitation for everyone is key for cities to survive. We cannot have cities or villages or whatever we call it. We cannot have the country functioning in the same way as it has been doing before. We really need to think about having more open spaces, more water and sanitation, being more environment friendly, because the pandemic is here to stay and stay, and the virus will keep on evolving. And at one point, we will definitely win COVID-19, but we really need to start thinking that this is the crisis of a pandemic, but climate change as a whole is waiting to is actually knocking at the door. So we really need to start rethinking about the design and architecture of the cities. But and that's actually something urban planners should be talking about and developing plans for.
India has announced the world's largest vaccination drive with both the public and the private sector, and paid advances to vaccine manufacturers as well. What is your opinion on the strategy where manufacturers have a free hand to set the price for different markets? How does it impact health equity?
I found it rather surprising that for a government which advocates for one nation, one PAN card, one nation, one pension, and one nation, one everything, we should have a country where one nation does not get the same one vaccine price. I think one nation, one vaccine price should have been the most appropriate step. And when I say price, this should have been at the same price at which the central government has procured it, which is, I believe, is somewhere around 150 rupees. And I think this is actually a realistic price, and it's not a price which makes profit, it's not makes a huge profit, but it does keep a margin of profit. And over time, when you're vaccinating so many billions or millions of people, it becomes a huge profit. So there is no reason for a private corporation to be able to charge differentially from state governments, central governments, and private hospitals. In spite of knowing our history, we are now asking a private corporation to set prices for the government rather than the government setting prices. And you know, if and you must think of it as how free market works. If I'm a seller and I get 400 rupees by selling to this person and 600 rupees by selling to that person, I will sell it to that person and just to give something to this person to keep that person happy. And this is, there's going to be a bidding war happening, if not anything more. So I really think there should be a one nation, one vaccine price. And also, just to state, the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine, which is the same as which the Serum Institute is marketing, it's available at a price around 164 rupees in the European Union. I have no idea why it should cost 400 or 600 rupees in our own country.
There are concerns about the center continuing to export vaccines to other countries while there is a shortage for our own citizens. With the US also restricting supply of raw materials for vaccine manufacturing to our country, how worrisome is this from your perspective?
From a moral perspective, I think that I think India as a country did the right thing by giving it up to other developing other developing countries as well as low-income countries. by supplying vaccines. So I think it was a right step and something which should be done, unlike what other countries have been doing. We should not be in a competition with other countries about who can do vaccine nationalism better. We are safe only if everybody else in this country and everybody else in the world is safe. And I really need to stress again, I think a lot of us are in public health, come from medical background. I do too. But we need to really think and move out from our biomedical lens of seeing a pandemic. Vaccines are one of the strategies to counter the pandemic, but it's not the magic bullet which we are looking for, because as we have seen, there are strains and there would be some in which case it will work and some it won't work, and it's logistically impossible to vaccinate the entire world in 6 months or 1 year. It's not possible. It's simply not possible. So, and we need to survive till then and put in policies in place so that the harms due to the pandemic that has spread are minimized globally. So you really need to think about it from a global perspective. And I find it really disheartening that at this point of time, President Biden has actually refusing to change their policies. And I also find it very disheartening that for more than 6 months now, from October till now, the World Trade Organization has been keeping on discussing the issue of wavering the intellectual property rights for COVID-19 vaccines, drugs, and other technologies. It's 6 months and global leaders cannot do something that should have been done from the word go. And India and South Africa's proposal to do it is really good, but I don't see high-income countries actually developing the goodness in their heart to be implementing it. I would suggest that the Indian government should use facilities provided by the TRIPS, and this is also something that is provided under the Indian IP Act, to start issuing compulsory licensing for all vaccines and all products which are available for COVID-19. This would mean that generics can be developed by any other organization within the country. So this would mean a lot of increased capacity, and we would not have to depend on a monopoly of any one company. And there has been examples of this. Compulsory licensing has been granted a lot previously too.
Is there anything else you would like to add? Those are all of my questions.
Yes, I think one key message I would like to add is we need to stop thinking just about vaccines. And yes, it's important. We need it for the long-term strategy. But at this moment, we really need to break COVID wave 2 and the transmission that is happening in the community. We need to. I would request all parties involved at any level to stop the blame game and start taking their own accountability, put their act together, and do what is needed for the country and for our people to survive. I think that's the key thing. We need the political will to actually do what is needed, instead of trying to shrink responsibilities by giving up. So I think that's the key message.
Thank you so much for your time. I myself have learned a lot, and I'm really glad that you explained things in very simple terms so that all our listeners can understand as well.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Suno India Show. You can listen to it on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and any other podcast app of your choice.